If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Crabby Christian,
a Misfit Media Network production.
I am your host and resident Crabby Christian, Blake, and every week I get to have the coolest conversations with incredible people about all the things most Christians are still not sure we're allowed to talk about. So if you've been looking for a place to land with all your crap, and for someone to just be honest about what it looks like to walk through this Christian life, well, you've come to the right place. Pull up a seat, pop in your headphones and tune out your kids, and come hang out with me and a guest for the authentic conversations that you have been looking for. All right, John, welcome to Confessions of a Crappy Christian.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for being here. So you are a retired U.S. federal law enforcement officer. Your list of accomplishments is well-established and distinguished, but you're also the author of a book called A Higher Calling, A Biblical Guide for First Responders, Military, and Veterans. Tell us about your book and kind of your journey to getting to the point where you were writing it.
So the book itself, like you said, it's for military veterans, first responders of any kind, law enforcement, firefighters, anybody in the medical services that has had to deal with horrible experiences.
Yeah.
And one of the things, so I was raised in a Christian household, but I actually didn't become a Christian until my adult time. But being raised in that Christian house, I was brought up believing certain things about how you treat people, how you deal with people and interact. And not necessarily say, like, I come from a really prominent military family as well.
Okay.
A large portion of my family was in the military. I was in the military. So it's not necessarily that we're very strict or Puritan or anything like
yeah.
that, but it was more just treat people with dignity and respect. And when you go in the military, when you get into some of these professions, there's situations where you cannot be effective and still be a nice person.
Yeah.
There are times where you have to do things that you may not be comfortable with initially. And so with my combat experience with the military, then getting into law enforcement, local law enforcement quickly after getting out of the military, and then transitioning into federal law enforcement, I was mentoring a lot of people that were going through some of the same situations I had gone through or experiences I had gone to, but, you know, were a little bit younger than me, but like my nieces and nephews and some friends on when I was on the sheriff's department. And then when COVID hit, I just retired from the Federal Air Marshal Service. So I was flying on aircraft, protecting civilian aircraft against terrorist activities. And we were flying a lot. And then COVID hit, you probably remember, everything shut down.
Right.
So there were no planes flying. So they didn't know what to do with us for a while. And it was at that point, my wife got tired of me, you know, saying, oh, I should write a book. And in my mind, a book like, you know, a thriller or a novel or something like that. She's like, yeah, you should write a book because you're home. Wait, like you're starting to annoy me. You know, she said, why don't you just write kind of the experiences of, you know, the things that you've helped other people get mentor through.
Yeah.
That's where it came from. So I started looking law enforcement, military, veterans, the things that you have to deal with. There are some Bible studies out there.
Yeah.
But it's like a 30-day or a 10-day kind of study, but it doesn't really address, it's more for, you know, hey, here's this, you know, encouraging verse.
Right.
There wasn't a lot, if I actually couldn't find anything that specifically addressed the things that are discussed in the book as far as death and trauma.
Yeah.
You inflict violence on other people in these professions.
Right.
So what does the Bible say about those things? Specifically, what does the Bible say about those things? That's basically what the book entails.
I think it's so interesting what you said at the beginning about how you grew up in a Christian home. You grew up kind of with this standard of how we treated people and how people interacted with one another. And then you get into this career, essentially, you've made a career of some kind of service. And it's like, oh, wait, like, I can't always be nice. I can't always tiptoe around things or give people inordinate amounts of grace. And I think that can be difficult for people to like reconcile those two things. What did that look like for you? Like, did you have to kind of wrestle with that at the beginning?
Not just at the beginning. You wrestle with it a lot. And you get into these patterns where you'll go through a period where it's fairly normal arrests and things like that. And then you get the one person who is either having some kind of mental crisis on drugs and which is, you know, exacerbating that. And there's this whole buildup of things where even though you're trying to help, and that's ultimately what you're doing in law enforcement, firefighting, nursing, and you're trying to help, but in order to help them, you may have to
hurt them.
Right. And then the whole thing of being presented with a life threat.
Right.
Somebody who's threatening your life or the life of someone else, and you may have to end that threat. You know, one of the things, I don't know if a lot of people outside law enforcement know this, when a law enforcement officer has to engage somebody with their weapon, you're not intending to kill them.
Right.
You're stopping the threat. But what ends up happening is when you hear all these people talking about, well, why couldn't you just shoot him in the leg? Why couldn't you just shoot him? Several factors are why that's not practical.
Right.
But ultimately, physiologically, the best way to stop a threat is what you call center mass.
Mm-hmm.
It triggers, like, it makes the brain reassess what it's doing.
And right.
So that's ultimately what you're doing. However, I kind of digress there, but the whole point is you're actually trying to help.
Exactly.
And it's hard to mesh the fact that you're hurting somebody. You are ultimately trying to help them. But the Bible has a lot of practical advice on doing that. Like, you know, you always hear the, you know, thou shalt not kill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I kind of go into the history of how that was actually changed. The original text is thou shalt not murder.
Murder, yeah.
Right. And so that's a mindset issue. You're not going out there with the intent to murder.
Right.
So the idea that having to necessarily, you know, take a life potentially when it's necessary, that's not murder.
Right.
And so trying to get that in process through, it's hard.
Yeah.
And everybody that first time they have to do it, I don't know of anybody who it was easy for them.
Right. Well, and you look at the Old Testament and there's a lot of like righteous killing. I mean, and my question for not to like label people, but the more like extreme pacifists is like, how do you reconcile that? How do you reconcile a God that like told his people to kill people? Like, and there was always purpose. It was always protection. It was always like, these people were threatening like the Israelites or whoever you want to say.
Right.
And I love that you said that about the translation, because there is a difference between killing and murdering. There's a difference in intention. There is a difference in how you approach the, you know, the whole conversation. One of the things that you mentioned is like kind of having to deal with people who are the, let's say, perpetrator that, you know, are having their own like mental health crisis. I think the other side of that conversation is like the mental health impact on like the actual officers or service members.
That's really what I'm trying to address in the entirety of the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not, that's the core of the book.
Yeah.
Violence, trauma, but it also goes into just other aspects of those professions. Training, you have to be adequate. You have to be physically fit. You have to be adequately trained in your skills in order to perform them under stress. your relationships? What does the Bible say about you in these professions with your relationships, your work relationships, your personal relationships, your church relationships, your friends who are not in these professions? And I would actually recommend continue those friendships.
Yes.
A lot of times people get into these professions and become super insular. And it's because the shared experiences.
Right.
People who have never been in a cruiser, working a street or ambulance or a, you know, fire truck, they don't understand the extreme mental pressure that those folks are under when they're performing their job. And part of a coping mechanism is a dark humor that develops within these communities. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And some of the things that you can kind of read or in between the lines in the Bible is you can see that this isn't anything new either.
Oh, yeah.
So because people don't understand, you want to spend more of your free time with the people who do. I've done that both in the military and in the law enforcement side, but I would recommend, highly recommend, continuing your relationships with those people that, you already had friendships with before you got into these professions. If they, it's only because they will help ground you back into understanding that it's not everybody on the planet, you know, everybody's not like this, you know, and you get really, really jaded and really this wall builds up because you are used to dealing with the worst aspects of society.
Well, and you're on the front lines.
Right. Yeah. And when you're dealing with the worst aspect of society, you'll go to Walmart or you'll go to the movie theater. And not only are you on heightened alert because you've had to respond to Walmart, you've had to respond to movie theaters for incidents. So not only is that running through your mind, you're looking at people's behaviors and you're saying, oh, this guy is a potential threat.
Yeah.
And it wears on you. I was having a conversation with a fellow retired air marshal, and he was actually a Green Beret before he became an air marshal. And he was talking about, we were talking, and his son, his adult son, was kind of like, what was it like? And he said, if you really want to know what it's like, he said, you have to walk into this environment, look at a person, and in your mind, say, okay, this guy in the white shirt, if he's the terrorist, I'm going to have to shoot him in that second button.
Yeah.
And then you smile at him and walk by.
Right. It's a totally different like life experience, mental experience. How do people who we actually on the front end before we started recording, I was like, look, I don't know. Like I have not lived this life. I've never been a first responder. I love it, like, and do life with multiple. But how can people who aren't love those people well? And like, what is something that you've had people come alongside you and do that helps ground you, that helps you like pull out of that?
My wife has been phenomenal. She has recognized a lot of the stressors, and she's very funny, first of all. And that's another thing in these professions, humor is really high, but she's funny. And just the other day, got up in the morning to go to the gym. I was tired, I was sore, and I wasn't paying attention. And I started driving over the grass as we were heading down the driveway. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe I did that. Get your head out of your butt, idiot, kind of thing. She made a joke about it. And I was like, she actually was like, excuse me, that was funny. You will laugh right now. You know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, any of these things, they're situational. It's individual. Yeah. The people in the relationships know their first responder the best. But the first responder also has to understand that these people in your life care for you. Mm-hmm. So when they come at you with this and expose this kind of flaw in your character, or not necessarily flaw, but like this
difference.
Right. Understand that they're truly trying to help you.
Yeah.
And then take that into consideration, process it. I guess that's.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think being able to like live life with someone and acknowledge, like, I may not fully understand your experience. And like, to be honest, you don't fully understand her experience because you haven't lived her life, you know, and like that it goes both ways and that there's so much grace to be extended to one another. And I think that that can go for like marriages. It can also go for friendships. Mm-hmm. They're one of my favorite people on the planet is like retired military. Now he's a New Orleans police officer, which is a whole, you know,
that's a like whole other
one of the crime capitals in the country.
Yes.
And he has the darkest sense of humor, but it's my favorite. Like he will have us all rolling. And sometimes I think it is just letting people be who they are. Like, I don't need him to clean it up. I don't need him to like make it less dark. I don't need him to like lighten up. This is your experience and this is your life. And I love you for it.
Yep.
And I think like that goes a really far way.
It does. Absolutely. It does. And understanding that a lot of where that humor comes from is because of the darkness that we've experienced.
Right.
And we're trying to make that darkness funny so that it doesn't destroy us.
Exactly.
It's not that we're uncaring or unfeeling and we actually think it's funny. We have to convert it to humor in order to keep it from destroying us. So letting that person actually express that, you know, and obviously there are times where it may get to an extreme so that you might have to say, hey, that's a little, but getting together with them and kind of, you know, setting up those boundaries or letting them know what's going to. And most of the guys that are, you know, people in these professions, and when I say guys, it's like the general. Because there's a lot of great women that I've worked with in both civilian and federal law enforcement, military. But most of the people that I know from these professions, if somebody was to give them like a boundary, but let them run within that boundary, they're perfectly fine with it.
100%.
And granted, there's going to be the jerks. There's going to be the people who are just arrogant. And because, you know, these professions are cross sections of society.
Right.
So you're going to find the jerk. You're going to find the kind of wimpy. You're going to find, you know, you're going to find the, So you'll find those everywhere. For the most part, the vast majority of people I know, you kind of give them that freedom parameters.
Yeah.
If you don't give them the parameters, they're going to run. And you might get more than you bargained for, and understand that they're not trying to be offensive.
Right. It's their own coping. Like it's laugh so you don't cry, honestly, is like what it comes down to a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
You kind of mentioned like you're going to find your jerks. You're going to find your like less than savory characters. I want to talk about that just a little bit, if you're comfortable with it, because in the last few years, we've seen a definitive shift in like the, I'm not going to say for everybody, because most people that I know and think especially is dictated by where you live, love like first responders, love police officers, like love law enforcement. But there's definitely been that like that's been a thing.
Oh yeah.
What has that been like to be like one of the good guys? You're like, I am here to help. I am here to serve. And like the media essentially like turning against you because there are like a handful that were kind of like bad eggs or whatever.
Right. And you're going to find that everywhere.
With any profession, you're going to find that.
Any profession. And I won't say names, but I have a friend who was in one of the tier one military operation groups.
Yeah.
And he said, it doesn't matter if you're in this tier one operation or Xerox, you know?
Yeah.
Something that doesn't have a lot of consequence necessarily on someone's continuing to be alive.
Yeah.
He said, it doesn't matter what organization you're in, 10% of that organization, off the top 10% of the organization fell through the cracks.
Mm.
And I've seen that in law enforcement. I've seen that in the military. I've seen that on the federal side. I've seen that everywhere. Once he said that and put that in my head, I was like, that completely makes sense.
Yeah.
And to get back to your point, though, over the last several years, the narrative has really been driven by a specific set.
Yep.
And, you know, I won't comment necessarily on each individual situation.
Right.
What I will say is there's roughly between federal, local, tribal, state level law enforcement, roughly 880,000 law enforcement officers in the United States.
Right.
if there was this agenda targeting specific people, even if 1% was successful, right?
Right.
What is that? 88,000 people in one day?
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Like, do the math, honestly.
Right. So absolutely, the vast majority of any first responder, any military unit, any are great people who want to help.
Yeah.
They're doing the best job that they can with the tools and resources at their disposal at any given time. The other thing that I will say, again, not specific instances, but a lot of law enforcement that ends up getting onto the news occurs within a hyper compressed time frame with an elevated level of stress. And you are making legitimate life and death life and death decisions in fractions of seconds.
Right.
With minimal information. So
yeah. Have you ever seen the video? It came out like years ago, and it's like the news anchor, and they put him through all these drills where he has to make all of these life or death.
Was that the big guy with the beard?
I can't remember.
I saw one where it was actually a female news anchor, and I saw one where it was a community activist group leader.
Okay.
So I've seen two of them, and I know.
That may have been what it is. And like every single time he made like the quote unquote wrong decision.
Right.
You know, and I know people's come back to that as like, well, you have the training. And it's like, you have the training, but you're still a human being.
Absolutely. And that would be the one thing that, especially on the local law enforcement side, training costs money.
Right.
And training takes resources, i.e. law enforcement officers, off the street for the time that they're doing that training.
Yeah.
So I would actually say that the training aspect is... initial training is great, but you have to have follow-on
continued
training.
Yeah.
You have to. Even if you're doing these things on the job, you have to have follow-on training. Now, one thing I would say is, you know, like shooting accuracy, for example, you get a lot of training in that, but you have very little practical application in the job.
Right.
Then you have something like handcuffing, which you get a lot of reps in training, but then you get a high application in the job.
Yeah.
Depending on where you're at.
Right.
But you still need to train because people get complacent. It's there, you know, there's a natural development of skill. And the more comfortable you become with the skill, it's good because you're able to do it without thought and you can look for other situations going on around you. But being able to do it without thought, there's a compromise in the technical capacity of doing the skill. So like, for instance, there's some stuff with handcuffing where how you position them and things like that, you'll find that, you know, you'll go back to booking or whatever and completely not the way it's supposed to be. I mean, they got them in the cuff, so that's great, but
yeah.
So these are all perishable skills.
Right. Exactly.
Even talking to people, like just having a conversation with somebody, look at how nervous people are to hear that they have to go back to the office.
Yeah.
You know, people are it's actually, you know, creating anxiety in people because now they have to go and interact and have small talk. And
yeah, it is. I love that you said that, a perishable skill. And like, I think it's important to remember that we all have those. Like, we're all the people who are making these decisions to put their lives on the line and sacrifice. Like, they're making decisions that the hope is we never have to make. Like, the hope is I never have to make that decision. And I think it's acknowledging that in part, I should hopefully never have to make that decision because other people are. Right. Like, other people are opting to make those choices more often than they should have to, so that I don't have to. And I think, I mean, we live in the deep South. We love our police officers. We love our first responders. You know, when everything really blew up a couple of years ago, like, I personally like took some heat online because I was like, I'm not jumping on this train. Like, I'm not, I don't agree with this. I don't believe in this, because I have personal like life experience, both doing life with people who are first responders and also like my having first responders serve their purpose in my life. Right. And so it's like, I'm from Louisiana, and one of our senators, when
that's
he,
okay,
he,
we'll let you.
You'll let me slide. When yeah. his campaign video was all about like supporting police officers and how, you know, he never supported like the abolishment of the police and all that kind of stuff. And he says at the end, the next time you're in trouble, like if you don't like police, call a crackhead.
Mm-hmm.
He like said yeah. that on his campaign video.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious, but also like, you got to pick one. Either you want to live in a civilization that like you are protected in, or you want to get rid of the police. You can't have both.
Right. And do we have issues that we need to correct? Of course. Are they systemic? Like, are they from the top down, like ingrained? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, though, training, if we could get more training more often, if we can get our officers in and train more often. And there's a big push within the law enforcement community for people who are practitioners of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Mm.
If we could get that incorporated, and a lot of these issues that we see would be reduced.
Yeah.
They won't go away. It's never going to go away. Just like, you know, we can talk about school bullying all we want, but kids are going to be kids. Kids are mean.
Right.
Bullying's not going to go away, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we would love it if it did, but it's not going to.
I think that, and it's also like adding into that like the Christian experience, right? Like knowing, like we know that we live on a broken earth. We know that we are broken humans. We know that like, even when we're in Christ, like we're not going to get it perfectly. Like that's just the reality. And so like, we are all doing the best with what we're given.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of bringing it back to the book, when I talk about like relationships, I also kind of mentioned the relationships that you have as a first responder with the people that you interact with.
Yeah.
Like you said, the perpetrators, the victims, the paramedics, firefighters. You know, they're not necessarily in like taking people to jail, but they're dealing with drug addicts, you know, firefighters, you know.
They see a lot.
And it's bad. A lot of what they see is really bad.
Yeah.
But you can. There are some times where, you know, you could be forceful. You can use language that you wouldn't normally use.
Right.
In order to get through to people who that's the only way that they're going to respond. If you're trying to be polite and you're trying to be professional, like, I don't mean professional like law enforcement, I'm talking about professional in your language and,
yeah,
you know, how you're interacting with them, you might have to get into verbal altercation where you're using language and profanity that you might not normally use. Is that preferred? Probably. I mean, from a Christian standpoint, maybe not, but
yeah. I think it's a peacemaker versus peacekeeper.
Right.
Yeah, you can keep the peace, but peace may not be the ultimate outcome of that. Or sometimes you have to like go straight through it and do the hard things and say the hard things for there to be peace as the ultimate result.
Correct.
And that's how I see first responders for the most part. Like they are peacemakers. They are the ones that are making peace, not keeping it, because keeping the peace a lot of the time means like letting people get away with things that they shouldn't get away with.
Correct. And on that same point, a little branch off that same point is, as a law enforcement officer, we're not keeping the peace in general anyway. It's the people that you're interacting with day to day that are keeping the peace. And when the peace is no longer kept, that's when we come in.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think you're doing incredible work for a community that is, like you were saying at the beginning, kind of like largely unrepresented in this space. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like they have a lot of surface level content headed their way. But like these are the conversations that we need to be having, because this is like a very real thing that is, I think has escalated in the last couple of years for people. So when does your book come? It's in the spring, right?
Correct. It's scheduled for release late spring of this year.
Awesome.
It's through a traditional publisher, so I'm not doing self-publishing.
Yeah.
A publisher called Touchpoint Press, which is a Christian publisher.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're still working on like cover design and that kind of thing right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, once it gets out, you know, I'm a little bit older, so I'm not really hip on social media too much.
Yeah.
I did get social media that my kids wanted me to have, that I can stay in touch with them when I was flying overseas and doing things like that. Cause I was gone quite a bit.
Yeah.
Air marshal job. And so it's one of the best ways that I can still keep in touch with them and things like that. But yeah, so I'll update my social media pages and stuff like
that. No, but I kind of love that you're like, you get what you get. Like, I'm not a big social media dude, but like, I've lived this life and I have things to offer about it. And then like, you kind of get the opportunity to leave it up to the people that do the social media to get it out there. It's kind of like, you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Right.
I'm really excited for this conversation to get out for people. Be sure to get the book and give it to, like, if it's not necessarily super applicable for your life, I'm sure there's somebody in your life that it is for. John, thank you so much for such a great conversation.
Oh, I appreciate it. It was a great time. Thank you for having me again.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crappy Christian Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you super loved it, can you go leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening? That'd be awesome. All right, see you next week.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.